bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello, and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
Justin Robert Young.
Hey.
Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hey, everybody.
So, the topic for today is...
How much of your own book should you write? And what counts as writing a book anyway? And theoretically, if you have a book in your head and you suspect that a number of people would love to just listen to you lecture for 10 hours and answer questions and take all that and transcribe it and make it into a book, is it your book at that point? So here's where we're at. I reached out to Andrew asking his favorite voice dictation app, and because I'm finally writing this book on, basically it's just a breakdown of what I'm going to call the independent engine, because the URL was free. But the idea is, chapter one is break the entire world into basically two jobs. You have jobs that exist within an established structure, and those are all ladders. You can either go up or down. Or you can go it alone as a creative independent, in which case you got to build an independent engine. Then chapter two is, chapter one, you know, we come up with a bunch of examples. This is a ladder. This is an independent engine. Elon Musk is, you know, running on an independent engine. Steve Ballmer was working within a ladder. They just wanted to beat Apple every quarter, whereas Bill Gates was running an independent engine. And then, you know, when I was working at Dell, I was on a ladder and I jumped off to try to create an independent engine. And then chapter two is sort of breaking down the idea, this idea that there are really, and as we've talked about on this show, three different types of currency. You've got story, attention, and sales. And sales doesn't necessarily mean money, although it can mean money if you sell ads. It can mean money if you sell widgets. It can be actions that you get people to take by signing up to your email list or voting for you in some award thing or whatever. And then basically a few chapters talking about each of those currencies. And then the question is, okay, well, so you do sort of an individual assessment of how much you are at on these currencies, and then answer the question of, okay, well, if you perceive that you have a great story, let's say you have a good magic show, but you don't have a very strong reach, you're only reaching 1,000 people with your mailing list, and you want to reach more people, how do you increase any of those currencies, and go through the tactics and strategies to make that work? The normal way to write this book is for me to finally sit down and start typing or start dictating or whatever. Seems like I could just talk a lot, and anybody who wanted to could show up and edit the book like basically a big Wikipedia thing, where it's like all the content is made out of my words, but then they could bring up with live chat discussions, counterexamples, or what do you say to somebody who says this? I wonder if there's any practicality to doing that, and whether I could do it in the next 72 hours.
Brian, you have my permission. My permission to not write your book.
Okay, so this is the thing. I get to have the book made, but then I don't get to call myself the author of it.
No. If you clearly don't want to write the book, then yes, you are a very, very smart man. Like all very, very, very smart men, you can think of very good reasons why you shouldn't actually write this book. So yes, you have my permission to not write the book. If you really don't want to do it and you don't want to do the work, then yes, you can outthink your way from actually sitting down and doing it. Now, I know from talking to you that you are a burst of work away from doing it. But if at this stage, after you have just stated this idea and you've talked, you've sharpened it, talking to everyone you know, and there's no conversation that can't come back to your theories on this, then yes, you have my permission at this stage where all you have is focus and work ahead of you to not do it if you want to quit here.
I think you're misunderstanding. I still want to burst and do the thing, but the question is should I do it alone or should I do it on 3 days of 6 hours a day live streaming and invite whoever is interested in helping to arrange everything to, basically if it's fun for people and, you know, to get their name in the book and all that stuff as a collaborator.
I just think that there is zero difference between you, like at a certain point you could just, 'cause I saw your tweet thread last night and I almost called you, 'cause I'm like, I swear to God, if you just tweet thread all these ideas that are really good, like you are the every moment that I have known you, Brian, you have been waiting for this idea with this experience to do this book that puts you at a different level and crystallizes your ideas. You've read so many of these books that I almost called you and like, I swear to God, we're not friends if you just tweet thread out all these ideas. Because I think they're so good and they deserve polish. And that's the one thing, is if you're abdicating it to everybody, now it's everyone's idea. And I know this idea lives fully formed within you. Bringing on somebody to help you clarify it, talking a bunch, and having somebody else organize it into a thing that you can then polish, cool. But just outsourcing it, I don't think it's going to get you to where you want to go, in my opinion.
If I may weigh in, if you're going to try to tweet it out, it's going to be over 1,000 tweets to have something that's book length. But I don't think that's really what you're trying to do. I think you could look at it for like in phases. Phase one could be like, hey, I'm going to do 5 live streams over the next few days, you know, for an hour or so for each one. Each one's going to be a little structured in what you're going to talk about. And you start with that. And I'm thinking of what Blake Masters did with Peter Thiel's class, which became 0-1. Because Peter Thiel had very, very precise information. It was a lot of the Thielisms we've heard over and over. Thiel organized it into a structure for a classroom for a seminar. And then Blake Masters came in and took that and then made what I think is an amazing book, 0-1. And I would say, Brian, you don't want to outsource it to just anybody or whatever, because it will be crap. And I have friends who are professional academics who've even had writers assigned to them by publishers. Like, oh, yeah, I have this person. They're going to ghostwrite this for me or do this or whatever. And I'm like, if they're a really, really good ghostwriter, they're not going to get assigned. There's, I'm sure that's a writer that's worked on books, but like, and it's always turned out bad. I've had friends that are really knowledgeable people that have had ghostwriters go in there and go, and that's it. There are some real, there are high priced ghostwriters you can get who are effing great. You know, that's what Neil Strauss did for years. But Neil Strauss was doing the big ass books and stuff. And then when Neil Strauss writes a book by himself, it's a great book. So I would say that I would take one of three approaches. Approach number one is, if you're serious about it, you find that super really, really good Neil Strauss-like level person and try to get them on board, which can be done financially or whatever. But if you want another approach, is you bring on somebody you know who is smart and willing to do the, like we talked about, like willing to dig in and watch the masterclass by Malcolm Gladwell on how to make a very informative book that teaches you nothing. watch, you know, dig into this, give them a co-writer credit for being the person that organizes this stuff and work with them as a partner. And, you know, it'd be Brian Brushwood with blankety blank, who is somebody you've known or somebody who's worked within your operation or whatever. That would be I think might be the best thing, because you've got only so much bandwidth for time and writing. And I get that. I mean, the third thing is, yes, effing write it. Write a really good outline. Circulate the outline to your friends. Take feedback on the outline. Be prepared to say, oh, no, I need to restructure the way I'm thinking about this, because you can test a lot with an outline. And just write it. You know, nonfiction needs to be theoretically 40, 60,000 words. You know, 40 is on the lean side. 60,000 is a fine target to hit.
In terms of audiobooks, like what, 6-7 hours of talking?
Oh, you could do 4 or 5. I don't think it has to be a big book. Like, I like smaller books. you know, if it's a 180-page book, I'd be excited. You know, it, bigger books sort of satisfy publishers if you're doing the traditional route because they're still in that mindset. But you look at Seth Godin and some other people, they've put out some very effective shorter stuff. Steal Like an Artist is, that thing's, it's goosebump sized, So I don't know. I get that you want to get it out there, but just telling everybody, hey, it's out there. The hard part's the organization. The hard part's the structuring. The hard part is the thing that you're trying to avoid, and they're not going to do well.
Oh, well, what's funny is I actually think that part is all done. I mean, the structure, I can rattle off all 10 chapters of what's needed, and then...
I believe you. We've talked about it.
Yeah.
And I believe it's done. As a writer, I would say there might be more to it than that.
Now your journey truly begins.
Okay. Interesting.
Well, I mean, there's these are what my chapters are called, but there is the meat of it is the, how does this flow the way you feel it does? Are your metaphors clear? I ladders and engines and stuff. I'm still confused by that. What is the structure of a chapter? Do you do the lead in story with like, hey, there's this other story that I have, the research part of it and all that. There's a lot of those things to it, which I think you have the potential to make an amazing effing book. And I've, as a guy who's half-assed most of my life, I don't want to see you do that.
Yeah, I guess I'm a bit surprised because if what I seek to do is identify the parts that are soft and need polish, then the way to do that involves as many other people as I can involve, not the fewest number of people that I can involve.
Or one highly invested person who knows exactly what you're trying to do.
Right, right.
I mean, also, I think that I don't know. I know you have an idea in your head exactly what this could be. And I know you have the knowledge, and I know you have what is most important, the philosophy behind it. To go from where you are now to a place where I think you would even let me put it like this. If I were doing this project, I would foresee before I would bring it to you to polish it or to get your eyes on it, it needs to be more substantial. It needs to be the rough draft of a thing, not just the outline of the thing and not just the ideas of the thing, because I do think that it is from this point where you've got your map, you've got the gumption, you've got the drive, you've got the vision to that first draft, so many fucking lessons, like so much understanding and clarity and things that make sense within your head that you're going to be happy that you clarified and understood and polished before it even gets to the rough draft period. And that, if you were like, hey, I have this rough draft and I want to get it out to everybody, and so I'm going to literally just read it out loud to a live stream, and I want them to tell me what makes sense, what doesn't make sense, whether or not I should move things from here to there, then I would be like, okay, cool. That's a little unconventional, but I can certainly see the worth. From where you are...
I love that part of it, Brian. I mean, I love the idea of you putting it out in front of people now. Let me make that very clear. I love the idea of you putting the ideas in front of there, but more to use that to then go refactor it and then figure out where the book goes.
Yeah, well, and I guess I think about, I don't know, it had been a hot minute, so I was listening to some Dave Ramsey podcast, and it's like that dude wrote his book by just doing a radio show and saying the same things and handling every possible situation, but what about, and he developed all the counterexamples. So the book at some point became written in his conversations and just had to be written down. The way he got there was by having the conversations. And what I'm proposing is to just start having those conversations and taking those calls like Dave Ramsey, because he didn't write the book and then start doing the radio show. He did the radio show and the book emerged as an obvious set of things because he had a very simple theory that was repeatedly tested for 3 hours a day, every day, syndicated nationwide. That seems to have worked out pretty well for him.
Plus Alice Sullivan.
Go on.
The ghostwriter. She's one of the writers that works with Dave Ramsey. That's the thing. That's the missing factor is, you know, that other person who's really good at taking. I think you have the knowledge. You have that there. And that's the same thing. The thing that made that come together was this worse. And I assume it's her because she's worked on his stuff and a bunch of other Michael Hyatt's book, Platform, whatever. She then came in and said, OK, this is how we turn this into a book.
Right. Okay. What I'm not hearing is the who provides the case testing in this scenario. Like my theory is these are a few simple core fundamentals that infinitely scale to anybody, whether you're an author, a podcaster, a radio person, or a touring magician, whatever, any independent creative. Where does the input that takes it from a theory and make it battle hardened and polished come from? Because I don't perceive that comes from me sitting alone in front of a computer banging out a rough draft and then calling a ghostwriter for a spit polish.
No, it's not what a ghostwriter does. A ghostwriter, an effective one, and like ones that I assume that the relationship like Ramsey has, others have, is just sit down and you say, hey, this is what I want to communicate. This is what I've got on this. They say, okay, let's talk about structure, blah, 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 blah. They help you from the start with the structure, whatever. Ghostwriter's the one who's going to basically look for your words, your stuff, whatever, help you shape it into it. And it doesn't have to be a ghostwriter. It can be a written, you know, with whatever. But that person can be the person that says, okay, they play devil's advocate. They go, okay, you have the information. I'm going to play the role of the audience and try to understand how we shape it and make it work for, you know, the audiences. I think that is a thing you might just want to look into, but have a co-writer or but somebody who is good. There are 99% of the people out there who offer ghostwriting services, I may be generalizing, I do not think are good and you would do better to write it on your own than to use them. But if you can get a person that's worked with a higher level of writer or caliber, that's great. But I think that I do like the idea of you sharing and just saying, hey, everybody, let's put this out there. And it maybe that process, you know, I think that could be very helpful. I like that idea of you saying, hey, I'm going to go out on this. If somebody wants to make notes on, you know, the 0-1 happened because Blake Masters appeared, you know, before Blake, you know, took Peter Thiel's class and says, hey, can I put this into a book? Granted, this was a class for some of the most high achieving people in the world. So you're gonna find your Blake Masters there. Not to say anything about the potential audience for this, but it'll be larger. But maybe. I mean, I just say get it out there. Just start getting information out there and testing it. Don't.
Yeah, sounds an awful lot like you guys have gone full circle. And
no, my understanding of what you said was, and have them organize it, put it together. I'm like, no, like, I think you, what questions come up? Let me test this. Let me keep track of this. Let me make notes of what goes up. I don't think somebody's going to materialize who can make this book happen for you in a way that will really end up with a good book. I just don't think that'll happen. I want to be wrong. I'm saying, I think you want to test the information more, get the stories out there in the way that, in with the idea of leading towards where the book is going to go, and then decide, okay, do you sit down and write this? Do you bring in a co-writer who's a capable person of now taking what you learned from the testing of the stuff?
Okay. Okay. I guess what I'm getting is, I think what I'm, I just don't, I don't understand the skipping the radio show part. Like I want what the idea needs is tempering. It needs to be challenged so that it becomes stronger. And I can't do that alone, with word alone.
I totally misunderstood what you said at the beginning, which was the idea that they would organize this for you or help you put the thing together. And you just sort of put it out there like that. My mistake. I apologize. That's what I thought you were saying.
Yeah. It kind of sounded like a Diamond Club novel. They would write and organize your book for you.
Yeah. Okay. No, I'm saying turn on a stream. Whoever would find it fun to do, shows up and I spend 2 hours doing chapter one. It's 2 hours entirely on this metaphor and the difference between ladders and engines and everybody in the chat is, but what about? And I say, and then that's where interesting examples, counterexamples, trying to break the idea and the metaphor comes from. That's all stuff that I can't generate myself. And along the way, we, you know, because everything's being transcribed or whatever, there are brief moments that I will have a really good run of words in the right order, ready to go. And people who are interested, who were there, who understand, well, it seems like this was a good part, that was a good part, that was a good part. Like a Wikipedia article, the words that I spoke eventually get condensed and refined. And through a series of edits where people are trying to outcompete each other to maximize clarity, then my words that took 2.5 hours, 3 hours to say become a 45-minute block of text that is now chapter one. And then the next day, we turn on the stream, and then we get to chapter two, which is definitely about explaining how you build an engine and where it comes from and all that stuff.
Okay, so then that's the one just point of clarification. Who is doing the editing and the clarifying from that block of text?
This is the original question that I was asking. It's number one, it's whoever is the most interested, who derives joy from the process and wants to be a part of it.
Okay.
So much like Wikipedia, it seems to have worked out pretty well for those guys.
Sure. Wikipedia is a living document for sure.
And it's great for shorter form stuff, but the longer form stuff is where it reads like a Wikipedia article.
Well, I mean, like, here's the thing is what I think would be what, and this is my own headcanon. This is your project. You have the right to do with it whatever you want. But man, would I be sad if this idea that has been explained so passionately by you was molded and finished by anybody but you, because your structuring is, I think, probably your greatest strength as an artist, and your understanding of that final shape is something that I feel is so important. I mean, I guess for me, look, if you went and did this and you were talking to people and you did exactly what you said and you were transcribing all of it, I'm down with all of that, right? All of the tempering of it, all of the new ideas coming in. And then at that point, I kind of feel like that gigantic block of text then needs a redlining by you or somebody else to get it to a place where you can shave that ball of clay down into exactly what you want.
Oh, 100%, 100% agreed. I'm just trying how to get the stress testing that all of this needs, and I was thinking that doing it as a series of streams would be a good way to do it.
I think what's happening here is, I think your idea has kind of got two basic parts to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're looking at their hesitance of part B as a condemnation of both parts. I think doing live stream, doing the radio, however you want to structure, whatever, we unabashedly are into it. But I think what they don't want to happen...
it's the wikifying of the project.
Right. At the end of the day, whatever comes out of that, you're still going to have to look at anyway, or an editor or someone is going to have to do. And so you might as well scrap the part where you try to wrangle cats to do work for you for free.
Sure.
I think the best nonfiction books I've read, it's not we talk about this with Alchemy. Like, Roy Sutherland has got a lot of great stories, but what Alchemy lacks for me is structure. It does not have the structure of like the better books. And I get there is an inherent structure there, but it's not, to me, it's a very muddled one. And that's the hardest part, is to sit down and to take the bird's eye view and go, this is the whole material. And you've already said this is a chapter. And what you said to me makes sense, but I'm like, there probably is a deeper discussion with you and somebody about the structure of this and the metaphors and that, then getting into, you know, kind of the meat of it. But I think the hardest part is the overall organizational part of it, what to use and stuff. And I don't think crowdsourcing has ever proven to be very good at that. It's great at stuff like Wikipedia articles. It's great at stuff like this. You read a long enough Wikipedia article, you fall asleep, because that's where Wikipedia sort of falls apart. It's great at this block here, but it's not a narrative. It's not supposed to be. And what you're doing is sort of a narrative story. I'm also, let's just do part one of you get out there and get the stuff and see what feedback you get. I think that's great. 1,000% into that. 1,000%.
I'm upbidding Andrew. 2,000% and not a penny less. Look, dude, here's the biggest thing is like, I don't know anybody on the F-wording planet. I almost made Bryce edit because I'm so passionate about this. Who has read or listened to more of these books than you have. And I know how your brain works when it comes to structuring and understanding what stuff is. Like that to me, look, the idea is great. It is gestated and it is ready to be birthed. But oh my God, do I think it would be only half of what it could be if this is not, once it's in its roughest form, then hewn to exactly the book you know you would want to read, because that's who you are. And if you crowdsource it, the only thing that I would worry about is that it's always going to drift to where the crowd wants it to go. And man, I don't know. I mean, maybe that would be a good starting off point, but to me, the big thing that needs to happen now is this just needs to get into a real form. And I can appreciate your desire to just get it out there. Like I said, talking to people, gigantic transcripted block of text, like dope. If that gets you from inside your head and on the whiteboard to, a gigantic block of text, cool. That's your book. Now you just got to figure out exactly how it gets put together. Because, man, do I think you could put together the best version of this book? Because you know this idea so damn well, and you're so prepared for it. Like I don't know anybody else on the planet that would be able to know the form and function of these books and what's annoying and what's great and what's worthwhile. Like that is such a strength for you in my mind.
Sure. Sure. Well, I appreciate that. And I guess this, the whole discussion is fueled by my deepest fear, which is when it gets down to the most tedious part, that's when it'll be like, eh, I'm bored. I already got all this. I mean, I know this. Now I have to take all the time with my dumb fingers to translate my thoughts that are so pure and awesome through these keyboards.
But I would say the tedious part is where great books are made and bad books happen. The tedious part is the important part. The tedious part is, to me, it's like, it's not the writing part will actually be very fast. If you have a really, really good outline, the writing part will be very fast. It will be effortless because it will flow. And if you figure out your words per hour with a really good outline, this book will not take very long to write. The hard part is to figure out what is that structure? What is the right, you know, the right number of anecdotes to put in each chapter, the right way to start, the right way to finish. The first book that I wrote that was not magic was a nonfiction book, was about how to make an action movie. And that was an interesting experience for me because I wanted to communicate my experiences of making an indie movie for no money and getting into the festivals. And I was intimidated because all I'd ever written to that point were magic books, which each one was like, here's a trick, here's a trick, here's a trick. And I did, you know, the thing that Justin said is I sat down, I looked at my favorite books on film stuff like Rodriguez, others. I'm like, oh, I had a journey. I went from here to here. The book starts with me wanting to do this thing. The book ends with me doing this thing. And this is a book, me telling about the things I learned about how to get from point A to point B. Once I understood that my outline was just a series of questions of how do you make a movie? Let me break that down into how do you write? How do you do this? How do you do that? And let me break that into these questions. How do you do blank, 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 blank? and using the idea of if I can answer a question with a story, then that was better than just flat out just saying the thing. That would be the best approach. And I wrote the book and it was fun. And that book actually got used for years in some college classrooms as an example on like indie filmmaking, not because I had a lot of really good information. It just, I did so many dumb mistakes that I was willing to talk about that it was helpful. And I think for you, it's that breaking it down into that same format. I think what you will find tedious, you'll realize won't be tedious at all.
Okay. Then that's probably the most important thing for me to wrap my mind around is that I at least got to get to that point to see if it's as tedious as I fear.
You're going to, and if this comes across as condescending, I completely apologize. Brian, you are going to discover a new form, a new medium of storytelling, which you've dipped your toes into before, and then you're going to find a thing when you see yourself on the page communicating to the reader, you're going to realize this is an entirely new form of theater for you, an entirely new form of expression that you're going to enjoy this, because you're going to realize that, oh, wow, I have a totally new way to really persuade when I really get, and you've written a lot and all that, and I know that, but I'm saying is when you really wrap your head into this sort of thing, it becomes a wonderful form of expression. It becomes fun. It's my I love writing books. I don't like editing books. I've written books and just been done with them because, and I hated writing. I hated that having to sit down. And I was very much in the, man, I wish I could just have this thing happen for me phase. And once I learned it, you know, it's like when I hear about people who talk about runner's high, I don't believe it exists. I can't experience it. People like, oh, the pump and the workout when it's great. Don't experience it. Don't know that. But the writer's high of, oh my God, I really enjoy this process. That's very real for me. And I think it'd be real for you.
I think because I think about The Professional's Guide to Fire Eating, Scam School Book 1, Scam School Book 2, and then Scam School Book 3 still sits 2/3 of the way done, but it just got too tedious. And all of a sudden I just didn't want to do it. And that's what I fear this idea is on track for.
Yeah, because you were going through a thing that you were past and you weren't really interested in finding a new way to tell it. And instructional stuff gets really hard like that because you're literally going, now I do this thing. Now the hand, it's like with magic books with me. It just got frustrating. But when you say, you know, when you say, hey, Brian, what is the most powerful anecdote, either yours or somebody you know, to really explain to me the difference between this or this?
Sure.
You know, when you give yourself that challenge, oh my God, it's going to be effing fun. You're going to write this thing and you're going to step back and say, holy crap, I've never articulated this way, but I look at it here and I can shape it. And this 500 words right here, you're going to be proud of.
All right. Well, here, I'll go ahead and give myself an emotional stake and pinky promise that by this time next week, by After Things, I will have something to show you guys.
At this phase, what I would say is you have your, I understand your attention. I would say, go through that again and say like, okay, I'm going to turn this into a talk, into a 45-minute, 50-minute talk based on these 10 points or whatever. Start from there. Just assume you're going to give a talk.
Mm-hmm.
In the powerful anecdote for each point, whatever from there, start from there because that does become your talk. It does become a lecture and it becomes the book, but and you could play with that. And yes, your instincts on wanting to use the crowd to help figure out what works, I think it's great. It's great.
That's fine. Barf it all up. What you are feeling right now, Brian, is you are filled to the brim with this idea. And I was telling you this the other day when like we were talking about something random and you're like, oh, you know, hot dogs. It really comes back to the idea attention dynamic or whatever.
Sure,
and
sure.
I'm like, You are here. You are full to bursting with this. And when I saw the tweet and I hear this, it's all I really hear is let me find other places that I can barf this up. That isn't where you really need to, which is the place where you can hone it, right? The place where it's like, it's painful. I get it. I understand where you are right now. I so empathize with you. But it's like, that's the reason why if I came off like a peen up top and saying, yes, you have permission to quit is just because I know that this is it. This is the moment. This is the moment where you put this in a position where it can be polished and it's something that you know is worthwhile, because the idea is, and you have the absolute capacity to make this something that I know is the art that you admire, that that you can be a part of.
And can I throw out another thing too to think about? This is, we are in a very different world in publishing than publishers realize, and even the named writers who we're all fans of realize. It is 2020. Everything has changed and people don't realize it. People who I think were slightly ahead of the game for a while were like guys like Seth Godin and stuff, who said, hey, I'm going to write smaller books and release more often. And a few other people have done that. And I would say, if you develop the engine right now to say, hey, yeah, I know how to take, I have a thing, I have a thing. And what's your, guys, your favorite guy you like reading, Ego is the Enemy and all that. Is,
oh yeah. Ryan Holiday.
You know, Ryan gets it. Ryan's doing this release often sort of thing, because he takes, here's a very important idea, I'm going to write a book out. I mean, what's his, is he doing a book a year? What's his schedule?
Yeah, just about. Yeah.
It's great. And that's a thing. Like, I think we're at the point to be able to do that, or every 8 months or something like that. And if you're taking publishing on your own, that's the thing. You want that engine, have that engine to be able to say, get over the fear of, if you know, hey, if I take out 2 weeks out of my schedule to spend 4 or 5 hours a day to work on this, in 2 weeks' time, I'll have a rough draft that I can let my friends go read and make notes on, and I'll have a product. That's powerful. You know, me with my writing, my books, you know, that's my writing empire is built upon, oh, let me get over the hump of, you know, 2011. Before then, I never wrote anything longer than 30,000 words. Good. Didn't seem possible.
Yeah. I guess that's something I hadn't considered, is that there's value in giving myself permission to keep it short.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, dude, also, and this is like largely colored by the Raise the Dead thing, which is the largest kind of self-starter project that I had ever really done. But God, is there just the entirety of the project writing wise, before I even got into recording it, like, there was just so much structure, and then restructuring, and then showing it to people, and then them finding it weird, and then recording it, and then realizing that recorded it was not what it needed to be, and then twisting it and turning it, and then eventually it got to a point where when I got it out there, people were like, this is the best shit you've done. And I knew every little step of that. I lived every step of taking it and turning it, and the little things, you know, that were part of this writing process then became this part of this larger tapestry. And you are at the bottom of the gravity well right now. All the stuff that can just come into your head, all the validation that you can get from telling your friends about it and having it make sense in their eyes, you've exhausted all of that. The only thing that waits for you now is this painful process of making it immortal and then making it something that Brian Brushwood is proud of.
Right.
And that to me is the difference between, let me crowdsource it. Crowdsourcing it is ending it. Crowdsourcing it is, you spend X amount of time, you get it out there. Yes, there will be a benefit of the wisdom of the crowds and testing the idea. And then maybe by the end of that, when you have this crowdsourced thing, maybe you decide, I really love this so much that I want to go back, and maybe I got to detangle some of the edits that they did, and maybe I got to flesh some stuff out. Maybe that happens. I think that would be an upset, because it'll be at the end of a thing. And all I want for this idea, all I want for you, is for this thing to be the thing that it is in your head and that I believe in from hearing you talk about it, because this is a great, it's a Bible for people like the three of us. Anybody that's listening to After Things is exactly these kinds of things that are battle tested. And if you want to know, oh, how do I know what I don't know? How do I know the ideas that aren't what they are? To be totally honest, you taking just what you know, literally just you in your head and polishing that up, my God, is that worthwhile? Now, where you then go, take it from there? I mean, trust me, you have at least two very opinionated friends that will point out where things don't make sense or need to be clarified. We can start there, and then you can go to any and everybody else, because you are great at networking with people that are going to understand where you're going. You will not lack for people that will go out of their way to help you. And it was a lesson that I learned with Raise the Dead when I realized that I had an email of 15 people that would listen to an hour within the next 72 hours, an hour of audio within the next 72 hours. You have such a deep bench, likely far deeper than what I had, to read and perfect what you have in your head. The only step that needs to go is you need to put this bullet in the chamber and get it ready to fire instead of just throwing it. You know,
I keep going back to 2011, March, sitting in that airport in Texas after seeing you guys do South By, you know, and thinking like, man, I spent years working on TV projects nobody's ever seen, and frustrated that I had nothing to show for all of my work for the past like 8 years. And it drove me nuts. And I said, and I kept thinking, like, I want to write, but I'm like, maybe I'm not a writer. And everything I'd heard, like, I remember Christopher Hitchens talking about, oh, all the great writers I know are musically inclined. And I'm like, I'm not musically inclined. I guess I can't be a good writer. And just everything got into my head. I'm like, maybe I'm just an idea guy. Maybe. And I realized idea guy is the dumbest thing in the world to decide to call yourself. And then I thought about it. I'm like, you know, it's a skill. I don't have the skill. Maybe I just need to sit down and just force myself to learn the skill. And there's a version of myself where I didn't see the New York Times article about e-publishing and I did something else. And I don't, you know, and maybe it turned out better, but it turned out great for me. And Brian, you're a treasure trove. There's not one book in you. There's many, 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 many books in you. And once you develop that engine, you know, why can't you be doing what Ryan Holiday does? You know, why can't you be doing that?
Yeah.
So,
well, I appreciate it. I appreciate the kick of the balls. I'll have something next week.
And I mean, we anything we say, it's critical. It's more because it's out of service to the idea and the knowledge you have. We will yell at Brian because we want Brian's information to get out there.
No, I kicked him in the balls. And I will kick you in the balls again if you don't do this goddamn book.
That's the point, is we're kicking you in the balls because we want the information out there.
No, I want to kick you in the balls until a book falls out like an elf. that's what I want, because god damn it, is it a great idea, and you owe it to the idea.
I think there are many I see in you, young man, a younger version of me, frustrated about, you know, I have this idea for this, I have this idea for that, but without all the burdens you have of time.
Hey, speaking of which, I actually have to run in another couple of minutes here. Did you guys have any other picks?
My pick is The Art of Readable Writing by Rudolf Fleisch.
Mm. Ooh.
My pick is the 1.5 episode third season of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Oh, wait, it's 8 episodes. Oh, okay. Well, then just watch the last episode. It's the only thing that really advances the plot in any way.
Oh, yeah. I heard this last season is very disposable.
Woo! Man, do you love sets? God damn, do they got some sets. They got sets for days.
Thanks.
Yeah. I tuned out after the last season. I'm like, she's an awful person and nobody knows this. I'm done.
Even dumber things happen. I'll call you and spoil the entire season.
Okay.
Cavalier, stupid things that these characters do for dumb reasons.
So you know what I loved about Don Draper? We knew he was a bad guy. We're like, yeah, he's kind of, but we liked it when he did something good. Like, I did something good, but man, he's a self-centered, selfish person. But we know this.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the great thing about Mad Men, is you watch Mad Men in that first season and he's got this horrifying secret, and then the secret comes out and the world's like, yeah, but he's still really valuable. And then you're like, oh, this isn't a show about this horrifying secret. This is a show about the world built by people who have horrifying secrets. Like, oh, look at that. What an interesting thing. Anyway. yeah, whatever. It's very pretty.
I have a very quick pick. It's the future of esports, the future of competitive esports. It's Spy Party, MLG. There's a video game called Spy Party, and they do the developer runs its own competitive league, and it's very cool. I have been watching
Sure. Back up. Yeah. I'm dumb.
Yeah. So Spy Party is a two-player game where one person is a spy in a party, and another person is a sniper, looking down at the party. And so the player in the party has to disguise like the other AI characters while doing sneaky missions, like picking up statues and swapping them, or doing placing bugs on certain people.
It sounds like you have to pass a reverse Turing test. You have to fool a human into thinking you're a robot.
Yeah, and so it becomes this back and forth of, you know, the sniper knows what things the spy can do, and so they have to look out for, oh, who goes to the statues, who goes and gets a drink, who goes and gets near this person, who spends a lot of time with this other person. If it takes a little bit more getting into learning how the game works than say something like Overwatch, which is just a shooter, but it's not very deep. And once you get it, I think watching it, the stuff that they have on YouTube, and I think they've shifted over to Twitch now, is like really fun and really easy to watch. It's nice short sets. They're usually 30 minutes or so. The short ones, and it's all I've watched. I have not watched anything else since a week ago.
Wow.
Because it's really gripping. It's engaging.
I over the Christmas break, I showed a family friend, and she had some developmental disabilities, and I let her play the Oculus Quest, and she did the tutorial. It was a very kind of confusing thing for her, but she was very amazed by that. And I share her feelings when I watch this, because I go, this is really cool. I don't have to understand anything about this, what's going on here, but this is very cool.
Yeah, it takes a little while to sort of get it. I only got into it very easily because I've seen enough videos of people playing it. I have never even actually played it myself.
Oh, wow.
But they have a pretty good wiki that breaks down, like, here are hard tells, here are soft tells, here are behavioralism things people look for. Here,
can we you spent how many weeks have you been watching this?
On and off for the past week or so.
And in Brian, you just said wow at the thing he just said, and say that again, Bryce.
A week or so.
You haven't actually played it.
Oh, and I have not played it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, which is why I think it's so compared to other big esports like League of Legends or Dota or something, which I think are just very difficult to follow and to understand from if you don't know a lot about games, because I know a good deal about those games and they are still very difficult to watch. I think there's something really kind of weird and special and nice here that I think people could get into.
My head's blown. Next week, we'll have to talk about the idea of designing games specifically for the spectator point of view.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be great.
Cool. Anybody else? Anybody else?
I saw Uncut Gems. That's a wild-ass movie.
That movie's so good.
Yeah. I don't know that it's a movie, but it was a tour of three very interesting worlds. I like that it broke so many rules of storytelling and meandered and ended weird.
Well, maybe we'll talk about it on Spoiler Time tonight.
Yeah.
Boardkillers.com.
Sweet.
Awesome.
What time am I doing that?
It's 6 o'clock Central. Andrew Main is going to be on this week. Boardkillers.com.
Yay! It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.